Your CEO probably likes you. They trust you. They call you when things go sideways. They're glad you're in the room during a crisis. And there's a decent chance that that same CEO, if you ask them privately, would tell you that your program is just overhead. It's a cost center. Something they fund because they feel like they have to, not because they believe your program pays for itself or has some kind of return for the organization. Those two things are true at the same time in a lot of organizations right now. And there's a brand new research out of a completely different profession that proves this. It explains it and honestly shows you the way out of this challenge. Stay with me. This one matters. I'm Brian Strausser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath, and this is the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. Today, I want to talk about something that's not a hurricane. It's not ransomware or a data breach. It's not a supply chain failure. It's quieter than those. But it's probably a bigger threat to your program and your organization than all of those combined. It's the gap between being trusted and being believed. So here's what got me thinking about this. David C. Baker, who advises professional services firms, whose books I have read and shared with my team, whose training I have been to, published a piece just about a week ago called Inside the Head of a Chief Marketing Officer, or CMO. He pulled together a couple of pieces of research about chief marketing officers. Now, you're probably thinking marketing, right? Not our world. Except it is, and I'm going to explain why. The first study is the fifth annual survey of CEOs about their marketing leaders from Boathouse. And on the surface, the numbers seem great. 79% of CEOs say they're strongly aligned with their chief marketing officer. That's a five-year high. 85% of those CEOs say that their chief marketing officer is an effective builder of trust inside the organization. And 71% believe their CMO puts the CEO's interests above their own. And if you stopped listening here, or if you stopped reading the study there, you would think the CMO's never been in better shape. But if you keep reading, same survey, same CEOs, 60% now view marketing as just a cost center. 1 year earlier, only 65% said it was a profit center. That's flipped in just 12 months. 12 months. Only 15% of CEOs would give an A to their marketing organization. And when they're asked whether they're confident that marketing can deliver ROI, 13% said yes. Just 13%. So the modern chief marketing officer is winning the relationship, but losing the argument. The boss likes them, they trust them, they enjoy working with them, and quietly suspects the function that they run can't make money for them. Now, the second study is where this really gets interesting. And this is called Confessions of a Chief Marketing Officer. 30 marketing chiefs were interviewed anonymously using Chatham House rules, meaning that you don't identify the source, about how they actually operate day to day. And the quotes out of this are pretty stunning. Listen to a couple. I call everything a pilot because when everything is a test, no one has to debate it. The data decides. Another one. I don't push any decisions. I just adjust the mood until the decision pushes itself. And my favorite, one CMO was sitting in a marketing meeting, in a leadership meeting rather, when an executive dismissed marketing and said, well, this is the coloring in department. And the CMO then didn't defend marketing at all and didn't argue. Instead, he made a joke about how expensive crayons are. Got the laugh, and a few minutes later, that same executive was asking for marketing's input on a pricing decision. David C. Baker's read on this, and I think he's right, is that these are not the behaviors of empowered executives presenting a case. They're behaviors of operatives, people who have concluded that openly advocating for their own function is career limiting. So influence has to be smuggled into the building disguised as something else. Now, why am I telling you, a resilience leader, about marketing executives on a resilience podcast? Because if you lead business continuity, crisis management, or resilience in your organization, I just described your job. And I'd argue that you're living a harder version of these truths. Think about how trust shows up for us. Executives call you when things go sideways. They want you in the room during the event. They believe that you have their back. That part of the CMO data would replicate in our field tomorrow. And between crises, a lot of these same executives quietly file resilience under overhead. We get graded on disasters that didn't happen, and that's a pretty brutal attribution problem. The CMO at least has a marketing pipeline and campaign data that they can argue about. What do we have? Well, nothing bad happened this quarter. I want you to try taking that into a budget meeting. I hear this from practitioners constantly. There's a phrase that comes up over and over in my conversations about managing things in the middle. Trusted, visible, but holding none of the actual authority. One senior continuity leader told me a story that I think about a lot. He briefed a serious risk up his chain. He did it well. He had a thorough analysis. And on Saturday afternoon, he gets a call from the COO of his company. The COO says, "Hey, great job reporting the risk, but we need to actually do something about it. What should we do?" That sentence is the entire problem. Visibility is not authority, and trust is not the budget. Here's the part that should genuinely worry you. Marketing is one of the best funded staff functions in any company, and it gets reclassified from profit center to cost center in these surveys in a single year. If that can happen to them at that speed, you should not assume that resilience is exempt. Resilience could be next. Or assume it's already happened and no one has bothered to tell you. So with all that in mind, what do we do about this? Well, this is where CMO research stops being a warning and starts being a playbook. Because the marketing chiefs that are surviving this, even thriving in it, are not the ones arguing harder for their function. They stopped arguing entirely, and they changed how their work moves through the organization. I pulled four moves out of this research that I think translates directly to that field, to our field. The first one, stop just reporting risk. You need to start pricing the decisions. Senior operations and finance leaders think about things in terms of investments, and they use that investment language. What does it cost to buy down this risk? What does it cost us to accept this risk? What does it cost if we do nothing? A briefing that ends with, "Here's the risk," invites that Saturday afternoon call from the COO. A briefing that ends with, "Here are three options, here's the price, and here's the cost of not acting," invites a decision to be made. So here's my test. If your recommendation can't survive translation into CFO language, it's not ready for the room. Go back and work on it. Number two, you should make exercises your evidence engine. The most powerful sentence in your entire resilience program is not written in any plan. It's spoken by an executive out loud in the room in front of their peers. We ran a tabletop exercise this year with a financial services client, and afterwards, one of their program leaders summed up the outcome of that in one line. We wouldn't be in a good spot should we have to recover based on what we've learned here. Nobody from my team had to sell that. Leadership said it. Leadership owned it. And it became the investment case to mature their program. That's what a well-designed exercise does. 100 status decks and conversations can't do. It lets executives discover the gap themselves in their own words. And notice what this means for exercise design. Design the exercise that surfaces the gap that leadership most needs to see, not the scenario your team is best prepared to handle. If your exercises always go well, they're not doing their job. Move three, let them steal your findings. This sounds counterintuitive, but it comes straight out of David C. Baker's advice. The more fingerprints on an idea, the safer it becomes. If your recommendation only advances when everyone knows it came from you, then you've built something fragile. You've built something that depends on you. So hand your sponsor the finding and let them present it upwards as theirs. Kill the big reveal presentation and co-build the readout with them instead. Your credit that you really want comes at budget time. And it comes from a boss who looks good carrying your work. The practitioners who get funded are the ones whose bosses go and win the meetings with their material. Move four, and the last one, talk about enterprise outcomes, not the language of your program. The Boathouse CEO coaches marketing leaders to talk about enterprise growth instead of marketing's contribution. His line is that one of these looks selfish, the other one shows that you're a team player. It's the same reframing for resilience in our field. Nobody funds program maturity or framework adjustments, but they'll fund commitments to your customers that are kept, revenue that is protected, a regulatory posture that they can defend, a leadership team that won't freeze in the first hour of a major crisis. If you're still selling continuity outcomes, then you are selling a category your CEO may already see as just overhead. Sell the enterprise outcome instead. Let me make this practical for you because that's what we do here on our podcast. Here's three things you should go do this week. First, pull up the last update that you sent to your executive sponsor, if you've sent any. Open it up. Count the sentences framed as company outcomes versus sentences framed as just program activity. For most of us, that ratio runs heavily in the wrong way. Fixing it will cost you nothing but attention. Second, look at your next exercise on the calendar and ask one honest question. Is this designed to surface the gap that leadership needs to see, or is it designed to go smoothly and highlight the program? If it's the second one, it's time to redesign that exercise. And third, when your next real finding lands, give it away. Brief your sponsor first, privately. Let them carry it upwards with their fingerprints on it, in dollar terms, in investment terms, and then watch what happens to the standing of your program. Here's what I want to leave you with. For years, our profession has asked for a seat at the table. It's practically the anthem of resilience conferences. It's the topic that comes up the most in conversation. And I understand the impulse, but I think the CMO research is telling us we've been asking for the wrong thing. The marketing chiefs in these studies have the seat. 79% alignment, remember, trust at a five-year high. The seat did not save them. 60% of their bosses still call them just overhead anyway. So the seat's really never the prize. The prize is what people already sitting at that table carry with them when they walk into the next room, the one that you're not in, where the budget gets decided. You don't need a bigger seat at the table. What you need are the people already sitting there to walk into the next meeting carrying your evidence. And that is the work. The good news is every piece of this is in your control, starting now. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.